Good evening, everybody. We are on, this is a class, The Hidden Work, and we're diving into the book, The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. This class has been going on for several years now, and we've gone through a number of the texts that E.J. Gold has written, including Practical Work on Self, Life in the Labyrinth, Human Biological Machine, Joy of Sacrifice, and now we've been exploring The Hidden Work for the last decade or so, it seems. But many, many weeks, because it's a chock full of information. And at the heart of the book is prayer absolute. This is a stroke of genius. And as I said last week, this is a book that the author presents. And I think it's the case with many of the fine authors that are out there throughout history. They do their best, they make an offering, but in a certain way, from a certain perspective, and it's perspective that I am taking, that work is not complete. And I am very much of the opinion that many of these works, they're not completed until the viewer, the listener, the reader, the dancer uses them and interprets them and does something with it. And we look at music, it's always a fascinating field throughout the years and the various interpretations, let's say, of some of the great, great pieces. Rachmaninoff, Piano Concerto No. 2 is legend, you know, and how it's interpreted is always quite interesting. The Bach cello concertos. The point is that it's up to us to take this material and do something with it. These authors are not intending this to be an intellectual exercise. That's another field. That's the field called academic philosophy. And it is a field that's been going on for many, 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 you know, throughout history, mankind, starting with Thales and the pre-Socratic Greeks. And that's a rich story in itself. But the point is that this is everything that I'm looking at. I was a philosophy major, and when I dropped out of that particular venue, and the reason was is because I wanted to find a practical way to, how do I interpret what Immanuel Kant was talking about in the Critique of Pure Reason in my life, right?
Good luck on that one.
Well, yeah, but so what if I can't? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, basically it's how do I make it practical? Well, that's what we're doing here with The Hidden Work. Now, in this particular, where we are in this particular book is we're on chapter 13. This is a book that is unfolded. To me, it's an extended study of a concept called prayer absolute. And the idea of prayer absolute is a specific method that we can use, that we can grasp together to work. It's a pragmatic manner of coming forward with the essential self and its interplay, not with the human life, but let's just say with celestial life, okay? Does anybody have a copy of Practical Work on Self? I don't have I forgot to bring it. Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I thought, it just occurred to me that there's something in Chapter 15, in Practical Work on Self, that is very, very important. Do you have a copy of that there, George?
Yeah, I sure do.
Turn over to chapter 15.
Okay.
This particular chapter, when I read it the other day, rang of you. Okay?
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It really did. Thank you so much.
Doorways.
Okay. So here's chapter 15. It's a short chapter. We're not gonna dwell on it. I'm just going to read a couple of things about it that are going to be very practical to what I'm talking about this evening, okay? And that particular exercise is called Doorways, and I think we've mentioned it a number of times in this class, and it's certainly a favorite of mine as an exercise in itself. I'm going to read the header, Ivan. Doorways, the practice of remembering ourselves, invoking our presences, having the continual presence of I makes a vibration of being which gradually forms a relatively permanent crystallization called gradation of evolution. Okay? One of the things that the reason that's important is that this is a gradual work. It's a gradual work. And these efforts, these little efforts that occur, are efforts that are critical to our growth. We have the ability as individuals to do it on our own, to work on our own. But as a group, it's accelerated a little bit. Why? Because there's this sense of more of that vibratory sensation that's there. George works diligently in a particular manner, and he and I've talked about this many times, that he makes very, very, very small, minute gains, but there's certain gains too. There's certain gains. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up about it is that I call that, we have, if we look at 100% of our time, okay, we have a day and we spend 100% of it doing something, right? We're walking, we're sleeping, we're taking a shower, we're eating a meal, we're whatever. We're allocating that time and the attention that has been allocated to us for that day into those various buckets, right? For instance, I might allocate some of my time into a bucket called I'm angry and upset, or I might allocate it into a bucket called I'm antsy and nervous and uncertain. Sometimes I can allocate it into a bucket called the essential self. When I allocate it into that bucket, I'm making a deposit into that bank. All right? I'm making an essence deposit at that moment. And that's to be cherished and valued. So take a look at chapter 15 again. It's a very short chapter, but it's staggering in its implications. And now the reason I bring it up is I wanted to, we're on chapter 13 here. And in chapter 13 is called Thought for Food. And in this chapter, there's an extensive conversation about our interface with food, and we've spent a lot of time on that, okay? The invocational dinners, how we prepare food, and how we ingest food. What an important thing it was. I had a wonderful gift of a meal, and I paid back. Make sense? I paid back when I was eating that meal, because those that put the effort in paid, and then I paid too with a particular kind of attention while I was working in that manner. So then two or three weeks ago, George ups the ante, and he says, okay, let's go to the next level with that. Isn't there a different kind of food here? And he talked about the idea of a food, of eating the manifestations of our machine, right? And then last week we had a very generous conversation with Susan, and Harry helped us out on that too, and the adventures that she had gone through in a little bit of unraveling her life story. And So I sent out an email today about the class tonight, and one of the things about this part of the chapter is that each of us, and this is what I was talking about earlier, Ivan, I'm going to get into this part of it. Each of us has a life story. It's remarkably unique. Each of our life stories is so unique. And in a sense, it was given to us as a poetic opportunity to unwind it. I've done a little bit of research on the whole idea of myth and the whole idea of the hero cycle. And in those particular areas, it's often the heroic adventure is external, right? The hero kills the monster, for instance. Well, I thought about it for a long time, and I proposed a different heroic adventure. And the heroic adventure that I'm talking about is an inner heroic adventure. And the battle that we have there is constant. But we get better at it. And that's it. We get better at it. We don't get stuck there. We get better at it. And here's what I'm talking about there is that each of us was born into a particular environment. Everybody was. I mean, I'm just looking around here. There's 4, 5, 6 of us born different states, different. Nobody's from a different country. Yes, they are. And different countries. Mm-hmm. And different, roughly, you know, marginally the same age group. But we were born into a particular family. And that particular family is a matrix that we were born into. And we were, in a sense, we were offered that. And since that's the case, and there we were, so like you deposited into that, and then there were life experiences that occurred because of that particular matrix. And then as time goes on, we start to add to it. Now here's the point I was trying to make with Susan last week, and I don't know if I was successful at all, Susan, but the point I'm trying to make is that was our life opportunity too. Within that confusion, in a sense, is also like the particular kind of work we're to do.
Confusion of
the whole thing. The whole thing, Ivan. Go ahead, Susan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did see it as an opportunity to be able to see into myself. Honestly.
Yeah.
And I was gonna throw in there.
You need to get closer to the phone, Susan.
Okay. It was so helpful talking with David and Harry, but then going through it with the group.
Yeah.
Really allowed me to get in there and get underneath something that seemed to be a stupid little argument.
Okay.
Able to use the group to dig under and find out what is working in me.
Okay. So let's review that just a second. We're going to review that just a second. So she said this stupid little argument, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what occurred here specifically was that we were viewing a particular set of events, and then there was a bump in the energy that I noticed. And I fed it back to Susan, and we basically, in my opinion, it was like we just pulled on the thread,
mm-hmm.
all right? And there was a bunch there. So
I would never in my life have thought talking about a little argument with my sister is going to take me further into the work.
Not only further into the work, but also it gave her a chance to unravel something, and back to what George is saying, in a sense, eat that form of manifestation of the machine. And I think that in a sense it was a successful meal because there's a more objectivity to it now. I guarantee you, Susan, next time your sister comes by, you might have the same vibratory reaction to it, but your hypnotic attachment to it will be much less.
Right.
And because of that, her freedom is more. There's more power in her own personal freedom at that point. Okay? So I thought a lot about, well, how do you do it? You know, how can you do this? Because a lot of the people that are on, I think there's 13 people or so on. How do you do it on your own? Most of us have figured out how to live life and not bother too many people. I mean, you know, that's been kind of like what most of us have tried to do is just, I'm not going to bother anybody because then it's safer, right? And then, so
but
if you get...
I wanted to ask if anybody in the class would like to go through an issue with the group.
So Susan said she would like to ask, is there anybody in the class that would like to go through such an issue with the group? Well, people are pondering that, Susan. I'm just going to continue on real quick, okay?
Okay. But yeah, that's all I have.
Okay. And that is this. Since maybe we can't, we've polished our act, you know, by after 50 years or so of figuring out how to not get eaten by the others, we've figured out how to kind of get through and survive to the next day somehow, because that's all it is. It comes down to some form of, I don't want to get eaten, okay? And so we know how to do that part really well, but that is also a form of sleep. And the sleep is grabbing the energy that we need for our own personal freedoms. And so how would somebody, let's say, that's polished at how they get along in the planet, everybody kind of likes them and stuff like that, and how do you do something different? So here are the thoughts I had. The thought I had is to pencil out in rough terms, people do stuff or don't do these exercises, it doesn't matter to me, okay? I know this particular one works. You have a life story. George, when we were up, I was up in Seattle, George and I spent an extra day and a half, and you have a very unique life story, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And he has some objectivity to it, quite a bit, but you can tell the life story, but attempt to do it with some level of objectivity, not the fairy tale that you've sold to others, but attempt to bring up what has occurred. Now, this might be a project that could take a few years or something like that, but if you start to write something like that down, then you review it. If you can begin to review with a certain form of objectivity, Ivan, where you withdraw from it, you'll notice that there's certain things will be a blip in energy. You understand what I'm saying? Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That there's, like, you'll notice them and go, oh, yeah. Of course, that's the one that you forget rapidly.
In the narrative, are you saying?
In your own personal narrative.
Yeah.
You know, and then you go like, oh, yeah, that time when I got caught by the nun and she scolded me in front of the entire school. That might cause a little something, or different things like that. So those are the points that Susan's talking about, that with this stupid little argument with her sister. That was tied into a bunch of stuff that then she has since taken the time to begin eating that. Now, she bought into that too. The stuff with her sister, Susan, bought into it. That's the part we don't want to, we just want to get rid of the pain mostly, right? I don't want to have that pain anymore, the hurt. Yeah, it's just, let's get rid of the pain. But I like the ego part, and I like, you know, I like everything about me that might be considered ego good. And it doesn't go that way, because the reason that it's caught you is because you bought into it. You bought into a certain kind of an ego desire for it. I'm sure Harry has the right word for that, but it's, you want something. It's because you're hungry. Those without hunger cannot be had. We are hungry ghosts. Mm-hmm. We mostly are that. So that's part of the story too. And you start to see why you want to hold on to a particular part of the story. And that might be a way of elevating this kind of self-observation to the final level, in a sense, in my opinion, that is suggested by the end of this chapter 13 here. I'll just stop talking now. Any other thoughts? Or is there something to read? Go ahead, Tamara.
Well, David, I'm going to ask one if George isn't. There's a question here from Simon. He had asked to specify what kind of issue. Hawk Lady responded, the same kind that Susan brought up. So I thought you were referring to a family of origin type of problem.
Yeah, it could be. It could be that. It could be a family of origin type problem. I can't tell you the answer to that, Simon.
Somebody recently was talking about an interaction with a coworker.
That was Jim H.
And
sometime
so that,
ago.
That was an issue that put him in to that kind of questioning.
Yeah, but Simon, that's part of the work, is for you to scan, you are in a life situation, you're a single man who every so often, every, you know, once a year or so, you go back to your home country, you're living in Canada, and your family's down in Brazil. I mean, what's that all about?
Argentina.
And you are a part-time musician, and you do a specific kind of a courier service. Scan that. What is that? What is your life story such that what part of it starts to come back to you and says, oh, that. Oh, I see. It's really easy for us to make it into an external.
Well, you're talking about writing a life story, in a sense, like writing a memoir of one's entire narrative, right?
That's a way to sneak up on it.
Yeah, this is, you know, there is an exercise, I think, in a number of different traditions, and it's the idea or the practice behind it is to cultivate impartiality, is to write your life story from an impartial point of view, you know, from a more of an essence point of view. But the thing is, you're going to, the more and more you remember, let's say the more detail in which you recapture your narrative, the more you're going to encounter those anomalies, those electrical field events and so on that E.J. writes about.
Don Juan calls a recapitulation.
That's
a recapitulation,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good formulation of it.
But I mean,
David,
the gaps are in there, yeah.
Go ahead, Eric.
David, several postings here. Jim
Please,
H. said, some I have worked on are what I call being between a rock and a hard place. In high school,
who is that?
Jim H.
Yes, Jim H.
In high school, I was accused of being or doing something I had not done and was punished for it. I had no support to address this and simply chose to swallow the feelings.
That's a perfect example.
Yeah, that's a good example, I would think.
Yeah, that's a perfect example because that's charged with the emotion of shame, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
He was shamed and he doesn't even know why.
Well, he gets the answer, feelings associated with injustice.
So, and where he goes with it is that now I have these feelings, it was unjustly. So he's built that up, you know, and there's this whole injustice thing. So that would be a way of capturing something, Simon. That's how Jim H. did it. He looked back, he saw that, you know, like in the fifth grade, there was a guy named Rudy Tavares that we used to play with. And we're all trying to do high jump, right? I wanted to go next. I wanted to be the next guy because I wanted to, because I knew I could make the jump. And I was going to show off, of course, and be
right.
Get adulation from my fifth grade colleagues. But Rudy Tavares started to take off. And as he started to take off, I grabbed his arm because I wanted to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in grabbing his arm, I messed up his rhythm. And he went toward the bar, and he hit the bar and injured himself. Not severely, but he injured himself. I was so embarrassed by that I tried to figure, you know, so immediately what I did is I grabbed my arm that I used to, like, hold him back as a way of saying, oh, I got hurt too. It's stuff like that.
Yeah, sure.
Seems so meaningless, doesn't it? God, just stupid. Well, you start pulling on that thread, and stuff comes up, Simon. Susan pulled on a thread and pulled on a thread, and her whole family comes out. But then Harry, go ahead with the comments that are online, please.
Simon followed that one by Jim H. with the following. Writing is very limited, but I could share that at the end of the year when I spent time with my mother, I can see that she was so useful to trigger inadvertently in her part my issues.
Yeah. I mean, we were born into the particular families that we were born into. Harry and I, we were born into a family and then given away to a different family.
DeAndre, you should continue with Simon's comment there.
Yeah, go ahead, DeAndre.
Oh, okay. Okay, I haven't gotten all the way down to it. It took me a few times to figure out that what was happening from a detached point of view and wait for the next opportunity to position myself from the point of the essential self and see what will come out.
Okay.
What I did was to observe her as she was bringing her opinions, but I was in a much better position. Hold on. To see my reactions. I just kept quiet and in silence.
Yeah, so for a little moment there, it wasn't his mother that was giving her opinions. He was watching this lady give her opinions. That's the concept of the breaking the hypnotic tie to the machine. Go ahead. No, wait.
Tamara has a comment.
Tamara has a comment. Go ahead, Tamara.
I just wanted to share.
Come up here and sit down next to Ivan.
Tamara wanted to share something.
Is that, or does Heather sit with you in your chair?
Yeah.
And then come back. If that's okay.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Pull the mic in.
Okay. I just wanted to share, I grew up in a very Christian family.
Amen.
And hallelujah, brother.
Yeah.
I was oriented very differently. I had shared with others that at the age of 4, I was taken to a Yaqui deer dance. And once I had experienced that, Christianity never resonated. And I also had a lot of early experiences that you might say were, you know, psychic dimension. This was not very well accepted by my family. And I remember a very traumatic experience around the age of 11 or 12 where, you know, I was accused by my mother of being a witch and...
You were accused by her?
Of being a witch. That I was a witch. And, of course, the scripture about thou shalt not suffer a witch to live was quoted to me. And
were you?
Well,
survived somehow.
I survived.
I was just wondering.
Well,
I didn't know her that well.
So anyway, this has been part of the struggle of integrating these things that seem to be non-ordinary, or at least didn't fit within the family matrix. And the way for me recently of working with this was there was a variety show that was happening in Second Life. So I took a lot of the material from growing up in a Christian family and being accused of witch to claiming it, you know, being a witch, you know, a woman with ESP and PMS. So yes, David, I guess I am.
I'm so worried about that, yeah.
But the whole exercise that he's talking about is in this, I also worked many, many years as a family therapist. The exercise that he's suggesting about this idea of it's called narrative therapy, where you change your story, and in the process of changing the story, your reality and even your family can shift. So this experience for me was a wonderful opportunity to take what had been trauma and make it into comedy.
There's a way to do it.
Yeah.
A technique.
And so I just appreciate. Thank you for letting me share that.
I think a lot of it is trying to find ways and means in which to achieve these things. We all know about it. We go, oh, yeah, journaling, that's a good thing. And, oh, yeah, the recapitulation or the narrative, that's a good thing. And there's hundreds of techniques to do that. But then, do we do it?
Right.
All right. This is the heavy lifting in this particular kind of work. Now, the slight difference, and I'm not sure, Harry and George, you might be able to help me on this, is I'm not sure if I know how to draw the distinction. I'm really not that interested in the psychology of it. I don't really care if you can talk to your dog now or whatever the hell it is you're trying to achieve. And I'm not even, and Susan and I have gone round and round on this one too, is I'm not that interested in that the specific electrical pattern change. Don't care. What I am interested in is breaking the hypnotic chain that it has on us. It says, I am that. I am. It wasn't the witch part that hurt you. It was the rejection from the family that hurt.
Right.
And that's the part, you know, it's like, I am not that because I'm not dependent on that. I'm another kind of being. And that's what I'm aiming for is how can the essential self be the one that absorbs this, eats this, et cetera.
And for me, the changing what appeared to be tragedy or psychologically analyzing it and working with it, it came out as comedy, and it was a lightening of the whole story. So like, David said, it's moving from an alter to an alter ego, and that's A-T-L-A-R. Thank you.
Yeah, good. Harry, are there more comments that should be read then?
We have a deluge of comments.
Okay, well, why don't we take a few minutes and just you use your intuition about what to read at the moment, okay?
Well, first, I'll read just a brief comment that Mark wrote, suggested that the intensive journal workbook by Ira Pogroff is excellent and completely non-analytical, and he recommends that.
Thank you.
And then Jim H. says, I never felt supported by my parents, and I gave them up emotionally in my teens. Eventually, I left home for a new country at 20 years old. I realize now they were unable to help me. There was a huge gulf between us, but the child in me feels alone and in some respects abandoned.
Well, let me ask you a question, Jim H. And Harry, you've heard me ask this, and I think George has as well, and certainly Susan has. So Jim H. is born into this family, right? Here's this guy, got all these remarkable talents as a voyager. And he's born into this family with these two parents. They don't get him. Not only do they not get him, but they can't support him. So he leaves the country. But why is he, I'm using the why, okay, as a question. I'm not always a big fan of why, but why was Jim H. born into that particular family and that particular matrix? Because it didn't start with his parents. It didn't end with his parents. I don't know if he has siblings or not, but they all got it. They all got that contagion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jim H., however, happens to be at this very class. He happens to be reading this particular book.
Right.
Tamara's reading this particular book too. And so doesn't he have a chance, Hawk Lady and Susan, and
well,
to
Jim
do
H.
something
with
that group?
There was a comment about the book from Jim A. or Mark Roach that I'd like to add.
Okay.
He said for life.
My question's still out there, though, okay? I'm not forgetting my question. Go ahead, Susan.
Okay. For life story journaling in ways that connect you with the unconscious river of your life and that bring
anonymity?
Areas into base relief, and then he recommended that book.
Anomalous?
Yeah,
Anomalous. Yeah, this is all well and good. I would like David to go back to his question, but let me just say something. I feel a compulsion. I feel driven to say something from the point of view of a writer, let's say as a writer, or an artist, or, you know, as people, as a lot of us are, I think, people who work with imagination in some form or other. I mean, I've come to realize over years and years, you know, as a sort of middle-aged person now, that the way these childhood experiences and sort of the archetype of my family and my childhood and these, the things that most hypnotize me, let's say,
right,
as a essence being. I mean, I find that these things come up over and over again in my writing, and it's sort of like this famous quote from Rilke in Letters to a Young Poet, where he says, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of life you've had, it doesn't matter if you've had a dull, ordinary life, you know, that you haven't climbed Mount Everest or gone to the South Pole or whatever, you know, you have, that every artist, every writer, every person of imagination has this great treasure trove of its own, his or her own childhood,
right,
to delve into and so on. And, you know, I've come to realize that there are like certain obsessions or like fixations of attention that for me they come up in writing. And it's a tremendous boon for me to have those. And I was hearing that
yes.
in what Jim H. was saying.
Absolutely.
And even in what Susan is talking about, you know, in a sense, it's like you, to me, what happens is you bring, when your attention is brought, you remember, or you go over the same ground over and over again through this repetition, the process of repetition. What happens is, to me, I can develop more of a detached view, and like eventually I have the opportunity to have that habit or compulsion of mine to see that in an eternal context, you know, in a context of to put it against the moments of eternity, or put it against
and
the archetype of my entire narrative or something. And the potential is tremendous for building on or for
that's where the
for working with. Yeah.
That's where the meat is.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's where the meal is.
Yeah, I was just gonna say what Jim's story reminded me of, like each of our narratives is different. Like, you know, I have a memory from living in a dormitory as a college student, like a very minor incident, but I've never forgotten this. And it's just like, and it had to do with remorse of conscience. You know, like I was in a dormitory, like fooling around some week, you know, Friday or Saturday evening with some other dorm mates of mine. And we went into somebody's room. They would, you know, we would leave these doors unlocked, I guess, partly because everybody was sharing with, you know, there were usually two roommates in a dorm room. And we went into somebody's dorm room, and it was like, oh yeah, we're gonna short sheet this guy's bed. You know, we unmade his bed and short sheeted it and made the bed so that when the guy gets, like it's an old camp trick from when you were 5 or 10 years old. So when he gets into bed, he's not gonna be able to put his feet down, and isn't this funny or something? And then somewhere, you know, the whole incident might have been 15 or 20 minutes, but I had this moment in the middle. There were like 3 or 4 of us in somebody else's dorm room, you know. And this was a violation. I had this moment where I realized that this was a supreme violation of somebody's personal space, and that we were actually like thieves, that we were like cat burglars in there, and it was offensive, and this was an offense. And it was like, I don't know if I actually got embarrassed or my face got red or something, but it's like it was so poignant to me that we were violating this other person that I never forgot that, and it stayed with me. And I think it's the part of it that's been more and more productive for me is to realize that I was swayed by this seduction, by the what you were talking about, the acceptance of this group of people that, oh, we were going to pull off this stunt together, and we all went into it, and everybody, so it was like a gang activity.
And the core
and
of it.
That was really the compulsion.
That you wanted.
Yeah.
To be part of that acceptance,
yeah,
group.
It was some,
you had the power,
yeah,
of that.
It was some.
That's the thing that,
yeah,
hooks you.
Yeah, and the,
that's the hook.
And the incident is like, you know, this person, this person was not horrified. You know, there wasn't some tragic outcome, or there wasn't any court trial about this or anything.
There never
but
is.
But the moment that I've never forgotten is the certain moment of remorse of conscience that here I am going along with these idiots and being this huge idiot myself and doing something that we had no business doing.
And it's the fact that you,
yeah,
went along with it,
yeah,
is the catalyst for the remorse of conscience there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you saw that you had that in you.
Yeah, well, it's been very, it's funny how there's tons of other more, whatever, I'm sure more kind, compassionate, and beneficent or noble moments or whatever in my a college career that I've long since forgotten.
And so part of what I'm saying is that if,
yeah,
we do it from the point of view, we're going to get back to the idea we are on chapter 13 of The Hidden Work. We're not in a journal book here. Chapter 13 has to do with thought for food. The book The Hidden Work has to do with prayer absolute. So what I'm talking about is doing this from that point of view. And then you go in and you see that person who just, they don't care about the ethics. They just want to be accepted. And they want to,
yeah,
have power and all that stuff.
Okay.
That person is in there.
Yeah, but there's another great thing about this. It's like the older, you know, the more and more like a telescope, you know, like the long corridor looking back at these experiences. Like, you know, I've come to realize also that moments like that are also memorable because that was an awakening of conscience. I mean, the fact that I didn't just have that experience or just carry out that action, but that I stopped in the middle of it and I had a view of myself. I had a certain detachment where I saw myself doing this and I had a judgment on myself in a sense. And that was a significant moment. For a night, I was 19 or 20, and, you know, as a 20-year-old, that was a significant moment. And
it was
only, and a few of them, you know, I would tend to chain together that those things are meaningful to me, and I remember them. You know.
Well, the reason that, the fact that, the reason that you have that remorse of conscience is why you're in this class tonight.
Yeah,
too.
Well, there you go.
Don't forget,
the string of pearls.
There are both sides to these things.
Yeah.
There are both sides. When you start to capture the stuff in this context, you start to say, you start to see how whatever it is that was working in you gets, you can now convert it to the higher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can convert it to the higher. Like, let's just say you're a sycophant, right? You just really can't, just want to get people's approval. That's like your whole thing, and you get, you know, you really figured out how to get people to like you and stuff. And you start to see it, and you go, "Watch, I'm never going to do that again." Well, maybe there's a reason that you have that that personality trait. Can you use it now for the work? Can you use these things for the work? That's the next level of this, and that's converting it. And, you know, taking that stuff, Simon, that you see with your mother, but now converting it to the next octave and bringing it up rather than letting it bring you down. Okay?
I do have a comment.
Go ahead.
Can.
Go ahead.
Well, I would just, in time that all this has come up for me, and I mean, this has been like a couple of weeks of work. Now,
longer than that, yeah.
Longer than that, yes. But now when I come up with situations like that, with my brother, there's a part of me that pauses, and I noted, I watched the button getting pushed.
That's what I'm looking for.
It's not, it's, I mean, I still follow through with it sometimes. I mean, I can't always stop it, but I can see it. And it's like, oh, wait, there it is. That's what this is now.
And sometimes, eventually, first of all, I want to make a couple of comments. That this is a form of confession, Ivan, too. That this form of writing that I'm talking about is not just being the clever college student writing their biography about their summer on the lake when their cousins did whatever. It's from the point of view of right at the beginning of chapters 13, the very first paragraph, it tells us where you are at. We are at the idea of the prayer absolute. I'm not breaking off of that one, okay? This is not a psychological exercise. This is an exercise saying, standing in those shoes, then therefore, how do I look at this stuff? Therefore, it is a, I call it a formalized method of confession. And when we can do a, when we can confess in the manner that we are, that Susan and some of these other individuals, Mark and Tamara, are confessing particular things, and they're not quite there yet. They know they're not quite there yet. They're getting there, though. But when you start that process, there's, that's when the release starts to happen, and the ultimate part of it is, I am not that. And so, Susan, when you're sitting there with your brother, and that button gets pushed, and that thing starts to go, someday you're going to be able to sit there, and you're going to go, wow, that's interesting. Look at that, how that's working in there. Look at that. Look
right.
Look at my, how my arrogance is coming up right now.
Wow.
Or your phone shorted out right then.
Oh. Is it there?
Yeah.
Comment?
That was a joke.
Oh.
And it's that you just watch it. But you watch it with a particular kind of amazement, too. You're kind of in this wonder, go, wow, look at that. But you notice the hunger.
Right.
You notice how the machine just is, it's a machine. You know, somebody
puts it's just so easy to follow the rhythms of what you would do that, for me, I now have a pause, and so whatever follows in my response to what he does, it has a moment in front of it, so it's not so mechanical.
If you are standing in the essential self of observation, and that machine reactivity starts to occur, you just see it as part of the pond and the ripples in the pond before you. So that's why we make deposits into the essence bank, one penny at a time. Okay?
Right.
We can.
David?
Yes, sir.
I would like to read one more posting from Jim.
Yes.
He said, yes, I realize now I was from a different planet. No siblings, sadly. This is my family now. And then there was a deluge of responses as this narrative took an entirely different tack.
I believe that, Jim, I believe that the work I am doing now on myself, and I have been doing for the last 40 plus years, is a method that will help free not just myself, but my family tree as well. I'm particularly aware of it with my older sister, but that's because that's something I can offer back.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about in here, wait till we get to the next chapter. All of this is preparatory for the next chapter, okay? The next chapter is can we stand in the place that the next chapter is offering to us. Part of it is the gratitude for the gift and opportunity of being on this planet. We were given a human biological machine, and that's a pretty damn good thing, guys. It's really good. And the fact that we had a screwed up family that's a bunch of Bible-eating nutcases.
Speak for yourself.
That was my family, by the way. No. That... and her old town, and everybody has that because we happen to be sitting in a Western culture that's like that. It wasn't Ivan's particularly. It was the Old Testament in his household.
Yeah, my family, it might have been a bunch of Torah-bashing communists.
There you go. But it was all the same thing. So we have a chance. We're given that opportunity. We have the gratitude of being given these opportunities because we have the skill set. Do something with it. And because we have that skill set, guess what? More is given to you, buddy. It doesn't get easier. As I said in the email I sent out, I said, it is simple. And you know it's simple, too. But the execution is not simple. And I respect everybody that's posting on there and talking about whatever they're talking about. And I respect everybody that starts to share any little bit of this sort of thing. I respect it greatly, because in this space, that is the form of confession that is for the higher, and we feed it up for the higher. It goes to that level.
What was the question you raised?
Pardon, Susan?
I would like to point out something very cool.
Yeah, get a little closer to the phone again.
Okay. All right. So Jim H. was talking, he said, no siblings, sadly. He said, this is my family now.
Yes.
The rest of the class have basically said, we are a family. I like
yes.
this. I like this as my family. Firm embrace to all with love and gratitude that we have become. Half World says we are family. It seems like Jim says that this seems to me like an offering to the Absolute.
It is an offering to the Absolute, Susan.
And so so there's just the acknowledgement that we have become a family.
Go ahead, M.A.
I wanted to say that we gravitate to the idea that
we gravitate to the idea
of status, of happiness. You know, we want our family to love us. We want to love them.
Go ahead. We're looking for a stasis and a happiness, and we're looking for our family to love us and to be happy all the time.
That's not work conditions.
That's not
work
conditions.
Those are not work conditions.
So she's pointing out those are not work conditions.
We need adversity against us. We need something to fight against. We need something to make our will stronger.
We need the adversity against us, something to fight against, something to make our will stronger.
To get us to the school.
We need those people that we came in with.
I don't want to lose
to get us to the school.
Family in any way, even if they're the worst family.
Well, so she's saying she wouldn't want to change her family in any way, even if she were if they were the worst family in the world. So.
Because I got here.
Yeah, we're all here. The thing is that
that's the other side of it.
Yeah.
You have to realize that whatever that situation is, we got here.
Yeah.
Okay. Ivan, there were four guys in the room doing this malicious act for this guy. One guy is in this class right now. The other three, they're doing whatever they're doing.
Who knows? Well, I don't even remember who they were,
But probably in a certain kind of a sleep.
Yeah.
The point is that if you flip it, and we started that conversation, Susan, with your family and the gifts that are given, too, that doesn't mean that they're off the hook and that we still don't have work to do in that regard.
Yeah, David, let me just say also that I think I think partly in answer to what M.A. is saying here, you know, I think
M.A.
that we could be, we could be characterized as family in the sense that, in this New Testament sense, that in the parables, you know, in the parables of Jesus or in this the New Testament teaching, it was like, you have to leave your father and mother. Well, you have to leave your father and mother. You have to leave your natural family because you have to cleave unto this other, I forget the exact language because I didn't study New Testament. But it's the new family. It's this other, it's this newly formed, otherly formed family that you need to join with, and it what does it do? It voids. It actually may violate your birth family. It may violate the conditions of your childhood or your racial background or whatever.
And in a certain way, it did. I mean, I had to. I could not live with my adoptive family. I couldn't live with them. Impossible. But my relationship became very good. Because I was able to change. They weren't. I never asked them to.
Yeah, there you go.
I never asked them to.
Well, just go back to this, you know, there's a really important idea in there somewhere that I think we've skimmed over, which is that there's everyone's narratives are unique. We have all these different unique narratives. But the part that's shared or where there's an identical stamp, you know, has to do with being in this circle here, that we've all ended up in this circle here. And I'd just like to say that there's one, you know, for those of you who can remember any old-timers there, like Mark up in Winnipeg, you know, our...
Winnipeg 9,
yeah. Our annual conventions, one of the things that we hit on, I think it was just by accident, at the end of one of those IDHHB conventions, everybody sat in a closing circle, and we were asked, like, please go around the circle and everyone say how you heard of this teaching, how you met E.J. Goel, or how you heard of this teaching. And every single story was completely unique and different. But what emerged, when you hear 25 or 30 people tell this initiation story, it's complete. It has an absolutely stunning effect. It's like a depth charge because I remember some. We did this more than once, and I remember that circle. And even though I had heard it the year before, the second or third or fourth time, it still had the same effect on me. It was just like it was completely mind blowing because the impression that I got from it is like this is everybody has been immersed in whatever that my family background, you know, where I came from Vancouver, I came from New York, I came from Mexico, I came from Montreal or whatever it was, and this is what, you know, and I was abused or I was this or I was that or this or, but you know, somewhere along the way there was this experience that every single one of those people had had, which is for some of them, I was amazed. Some people saw a poster on a telephone pole and went to a meeting, and some people were pulled in by somebody. You know, I had a friend, a college friend of mine in Greece, gave me the In Search of the Miraculous to read and said, you have to read this, but you can't take it away. You've got to leave it with you. So I was reading it on the boat when I was going back to get a plane out of Athens so I could give the book back to him. And then I found a fourth way group and so on. And it was like, what I'm saying is the teaching that I got from that was that there's a kind of a scripted aspect to this, which is, you know, there's a inevitability, there's a karmic element or a destiny element, which you get when you start hearing everybody's stories, you get it, which is to say that we all have ended up here. Here we are in this circle, and we had to end up here, and there was no way we could have, anything else could have ended, we could have ended up anywhere else. And, you know, and that's why I think the why question is not so important, you know.
In a certain way.
Yeah.
Let me ask, we're over time, but yeah. I'd like to ask, is it okay to go another 10 minutes or so? Is that okay?
It's okay with me.
Is it okay with you guys?
It's okay. Absolutely. With me.
Okay.
Okay, here.
Jim H. says yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Here's the deal. This particular phone system that I have, this free conference pro, we can have up to 200 people on the line.
Mm.
Now,
where are they?
They're all on the chat is where they are.
There's more now than when we started, I can tell you that.
Yes. But what I want to suggest... I'm not unaware, I'm totally aware of the second part of the story that Ivan talked about. How did you actually get here? It's a remarkable adventure to do it. Now that I think about it, it probably would be important to do that before we get into chapter 14.
I think that exercise is worth doing with any circle in this school.
It's ineffective to do it. It's somewhat ineffective to do it on the chat.
Online,
but
yes.
Here's what I'm worried about, is that some people can't call without incurring a lot of fees.
Yeah.
And I know that some people have a phone plan where they can just call anytime, you know, at any long distance. And I'm wondering if anybody, because I'd like to design it where we have a call, everybody calls in.
Can we, you know, I'm getting this idea. Is there some way we can hold this meeting in Second Life? Because then everyone can speak. Everyone can speak.
But we can't record it.
We could record if we were doing this. No, we could record if we were doing this, we could still be hearing people on, we could have people coming over a speaker from Second Life.
Yeah, but I also want to record it. I want an actual recording of it. See, this recording right here, I can.
Well, we don't have to resolve this at this meeting right now. But it just seems like I'm just thinking that to do a particular kinds of exercises, the having everyone on having a mic and would be not paying for long distance phones. For everyone to speak in the circle, that would be the way to do it.
Who doesn't have that particular methodology on their phone? I'm just asking into the chat.
Which methodology?
The people that are here,
Yeah.
We could set up microphones.
Yeah.
And then, and that gets, I'd have to make sure that it's recorded.
Mm-hmm.
It's a decent recording. It gets
yeah,
so
we're
wind
getting
it.
For each week here. Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to preserve that. I know we can record it in the studio, but then I've not been able to work with those files and get it on uploaded. This thing I upload within 10 minutes after the class. So I'm trying to figure out a method of doing it so that people can verbally actually do the exercise that we have now come to. It's a different form of food, and it's not necessarily the negative manifestations, but you'll be surprised when you start talking about your family, because the fact that you studied the Bible incessantly left a different mark on you too, Tamara.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad one.
No, not a bad one.
Okay. So, are people responding?
Hey, PathWorld suggests using Skype. We could all be on the computer visually at the same time, and I imagine they have a record button.
Okay. Yeah, there's a thing called a Pamela recorder on Skype that I don't not use it. And I think it has a limited amount of time that you can do it. Skype is a good idea. But I know the phone works, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I know that one works, so we can have 20 people call in and we can go around the circle and say, tell me your story. And the people here either could be on the mic or whatever. So give it some thought.
David, would they be like on the phone like I am right now? Or we just have
That's what I'm saying.
He's saying this is a good technology, Harry, because we get one single recording of everyone's voices.
Right.
And in other words, everybody could be on exactly like you and Susan and Silverdale at the moment, and it's clear and distinct, and you can speak this story. It's very potent to do it.
Yes.
Are we meeting now?
David, I recommend you and Ivan read this log after we're through.
Yeah, I would like to read it.
It's worth reading.
Good.
Well, okay, two things. We're going to do a little bit of administrative stuff. I'm not sure if anybody said, no, I can't call in. or whatever, but bottom line is, so we'll continue in this vein. I think we've gone far beyond the initial scope of chapter 13, but
that's true.
But it is all in this spirit of like food and a higher type of food that we're working with here, and it's very, very useful. We'll continue on that vein, but I'm very interested to see, can you call in? And if you can't call in, let me know. Maybe there's a way I can work it out. All right? Maybe there's something I can do to help.
David, Simon.
Yeah?
Simon says something here may be relevant. I mean, like right now. He says you cannot push more than 5 people. After that, the line begins to fail. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think that's a relevant observation. Okay.
Doesn't Google, isn't there something like a Google chat or something as well?
Yeah,
I've been on with 16 different people on Google
Hangout.
Circle, I think
right.
It is.
Yeah. That's, okay, we're at a technology issue then and how to figure it out so that everybody can participate in this particular exercise that Ivan is talking about, which is very potent and very useful for all of us. At the same time, so we'll see where we go next week, and I'll put off my Cain and Abel talk, misspelled.
Yeah, what happened to that?
Cain and Abel talk for another time.
Right.
Several weeks from now, we're going to be on chapter 14. On chapter 14 is we move into a whole other world. It's been implied but then we now walk into it at that point. And I want, like everybody, to take, during the next few weeks, to take a chance to look at page 149. Page 149 is the Warden of Angels of the seven celestial choirs. There are seven choirs. Each choir is ruled by a particular angelic being. What I'd like is to form groups of individuals that will give a summation of that particular choir. Does that make sense? All right? Here's that. I think it's on back. Oh. It's back. Okay. And so there'll be multiple people working on each, and I'd like them to people to work together. Now, I was told that there are maybe 13 or 14 people signed in, and there's 5 or 6 people here. So if there's a particular angelic leader, choir leader, that appeals to you, let me know by email, and then I want to put groups together, and we'll figure out ways for people to work together to come up, what the heck, who is this guy, right? Who's Gabriel? Who's this other guy I've never heard of, Michael or Sandophon? Who's that? Well, let's find out. And we'll do it in the best way we can, which is we'll do some individual research. We'll work together. We'll find times when everybody can meet, however the heck you can meet, to come up with something. And then you can feed those summaries to me. And then when we're finished with those, and this might take a month, okay? But first thing is I need to put people in groups. That's the first thing. The second thing is start working together. Then I'll post it. Yeah, Susan.
This is page 149.
Yeah.
Okay.
Page 149, the hidden work, seven celestial choirs, and they're identified by the leader of those choirs. So that's the other part of it. Okay?
Okay, and then the rest of the names are also involved with that choir.
You'll figure that one out, too.
Okay.
So there'll be seven groups of individuals working to come up with seven summaries. All right?
But not summaries of the chapter. You mean summaries
no,
of that choir.
No, just literally summaries of the chapter.
Choir.
No one's going to do a summary of the chapter. I've concluded it's too much to ask anybody to do that. And in chapter 15,
you
leap off a tall building.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll just, so this is an exercise, I think, that brings us in and will focus you very much on the topic of the chapter. You know, once again, we've been working to get ourselves to this point. There's a reason why this book is written in the way it is, and it's laid out in the way it is. We're ready to go to that level now. Next week, we're going to continue the conversation that we're on, see if we can figure out a time when we can do this other exercise that Ivan's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That'll probably be a 2-hour meeting, by the way. And then Cain and Abel may fall by the wayside.
Well, if you want to bring up Cain, so we can have a whole discussion also.
Yeah. But it's, and I noticed I misspelled that on the email that went out. So that's all I had for tonight. And how are we doing?
Do we have class next week?
Yeah.
What was the week that we're going to skip? The one?
No,
we're not skipping.
We're going to skip hidden work and do Cain and Abel because I think Cain and Abel is important to chapter 14. But I'll have to lay that out and tell you why I so think that. Yes, there is a class next week and the following week and the following week.
Okay.
And that's all. Okay.
All right.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, we better stop.
And we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Thanks, David and Ivan.
Good night.
Good night.